It's the one-year anniversary for Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. And all these fireworks and celebrations can only mean one thing. It's Mocha Latte time. It's a one-year celebratory podcast, as this week we have none other than the Duck Master as our guest, and I have a surprise undisclosed guest host, as well as a report from my epic motorcycle trip, the WBC, I try a new espresso, and of course an all-new hit from Mod Dog, coming up next. Hello and welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is your host, Circus Boy Nathan, coming to you from the Flying Dutchman RV. This is my weekly podcast, well, most of the time weekly. Well, whenever I can take the time from traveling the miles to bring a nice produced podcast for you. But yeah, this is my podcast where I ride my motorcycle around and try out coffee as I travel with the circus. That's right, the circus is my day job, but I have a passion for coffee. And you guys are in for a real treat. This week is the 1 year anniversary of Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. And we're doing it in style. I have here with me a special guest, a repeat guest, but actually one of the most downloaded podcasts of all my podcasts I've done over this past year. I have a special guest, and I'm going to have you try to guess who it is just by her voice. So say hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
And in case you haven't figured it out yet, it's a female, of course, and it's a person who paints with coffee. Yes, you're right. It's her. Yep, that's right. It's that girl. It is none other than
Karen Eland.
That's right. We have Karen back for a special guest return for the 1 year anniversary of the podcast. And we are sitting here, of course, in style with espresso. And she has I guess it's kind of closer to a cappuccino. I don't know. It's a latte that I just made up here for her favorite with a splash of vanilla in there. And we're going to take a sip of it right away because I'm thirsty. I'm thirsty for coffee. So cheers to you. Mm. And let's taste this here.
Amazing. Amazing.
That's better than what I pulled earlier today. I have a double shot of espresso here. And actually, it's in my new demitasse and saucer, which is fitting for this one-year podcast, courtesy of the Roastery Cafe. I want to send a shout out to Brandon and Jason at the Roastery. They sent over some of their Super Tuscan espresso this week because they are diehard supporters of Circus Boy and his caffeine addiction on the road, you know, because they don't want Circus Boy walking in front of any elephants or other dangerous animals that may be roaming around the circus lot. And I've been giving this Super Tuscan a whirl this week, and it's been delicious. And Karen actually has been trying some too. And what did you say about it earlier?
Well, I think this latte is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Especially, I've just not had anything this good made at a home machine before. So I have to say, Circus Boy has some skills as well as the espresso.
Well, first off, we're in where are we, Karen?
We're in, gosh, where are we? Little Rock, Arkansas.
Right. And we've been tasted what, maybe 5-6 coffee places this week?
Yeah.
That you've been out to visit the show. And it hasn't been very good. It's been kind of bleak, hasn't it?
Yeah, I have to say I'm a little disappointed in the coffee scene here. Maybe a couple places showed some promise, and a couple other places were kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, I would have been embarrassed to offer the coffee that they were offering, but Yeah, you'll hear more about that in the reviews later. But yeah, we're sitting here this week, and this is, like I said, this is the 1 year anniversary of Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World, and I don't know how many episodes I've done, maybe like 40, right around 40 episodes this year, so it's a pretty decent, you know, pretty decent year's worth of episodes. And this week, we have a special guest interview that Karen actually came on interview with us. And where was it, Karen?
That was at the Peabody Hotel in Little Rock. They have the strangest thing I've ever heard of is a duck march and a duck master. These are actual ducks that come down and get in a fountain, and the duck master kind of runs a show, kind of like a ringmaster in the circus.
Yeah, exactly. And we had the honor, and you're going to hear it here in a few minutes, you're going to get to meet the duck master of the Peabody Hotel in Little Rock, Arkansas. And we actually got to sit down, and we had coffee with him in the little lobby bar lounge there, and got to meet him, and Karen was there as well, and we got a couple honorary ducks, didn't we, that came along?
Yeah, he gave us some little rubber duckies.
Yeah.
Keychains.
Everybody needs a rubber ducky.
Yeah, everything you could ever need in the line of rubber duckies they have there.
Yeah, that's true. And we talk about them in the podcast that comes up later. But first, before we get to all of that, Karen, coffee art. How's it been? In case none of you know who Karen is, you should go back and listen to the episode, because that was a great episode. We were at, where were we?
Nordagio's.
Right, Nordagio's, drinking coffee, and she talked a little bit about how she got into art, and what kind of art did we talk about? What was
the art painted using only coffee instead of paint.
Right.
And it's classic masterpieces redone in coffee.
Yeah, so if you want to hear more about that in detail and how, you know, she got started and all that kind of stuff, go back and listen to that. I think it was episode 28. I don't know. If you go on bestmochalatte.podomatic.com, you'll see a big old picture of Karen painting right there. So, yeah. So how has the coffee art been going for you?
Actually, really well. I just have a new deal with David Schomer out at Espresso Vivace in Seattle to do about a 28-foot mural of the history of their coffee shop. I did one a couple years ago for them and had the joy of doing another one. So,
yeah,
I'm going to get started pretty soon.
Nice, nice. That's really cool. Yeah, the first one you can see. Which shop is it at?
The one right across from REI downtown.
Okay.
I don't know the name of the street it's on, but it's Espresso Vivace, their second main store.
Okay. So yeah, you can see her art in there, and it is amazing. Like I haven't been there in person yet. I'm hoping to get there this fall when we're up in that neck of the country. But it's really, she showed me pictures of it, and it's pretty cool. It has the history of espresso, basically, right? That runs chronologically underneath the counter that they have there. But yeah, now another thing I wanted to ask you about, you were just in Cambodia, right?
Yeah, Cambodia of all places.
Yeah, and did you drink any coffee in Cambodia?
I did. I had some hot coffee and a lot of iced coffee, similar to Vietnamese iced coffee with the sweetened condensed milk and strong coffee over ice.
Right, right, okay. And you're actually over there with the youth group, right, from your church there in Tulsa. But while you're over there, you had coffee. Now, was there any gourmet or what we would consider specialty coffee in Cambodia?
The one that I ran into, pretty much no, except for the one in the casino that they had on the border town that we stayed in. And it was pretty much an exact Starbucks rip off the store.
Yeah.
So I would have to say,
like, no. The decor and everything?
Oh yeah, like they had the same decor and the same, almost the same sign. And
really,
I hope I'm not causing them to be sued by talking about it online, but it was kind of humorous.
Yeah, and they, well, you sent me a picture. It was it Coffee Palais or Palais Coffee?
Yeah.
Like P-A-L-A-I-S. Mm-hmm. I think that's French, maybe. For I don't know what it stands for.
Yeah.
Is it Palace or Stone or something? I don't know. But yeah, how was the coffee there? Was it the same as Starbucks? or worse?
It was probably a little worse. I only went there one time, so...
Yeah.
But they had really good blended drinks there, you know, similar to a Frappuccino.
Type thing, yeah.
People were happy with those drinks that I was with, anyway.
Yeah. And you said, did they have super automatic machines or like the semi-automatics here or what?
I honestly did not see what they had there. I think they had, it wasn't super automatic.
Okay.
If I remember right, I remember hearing the grinder and the dosing and
really? Okay.
All that, so yeah.
Okay. Huh. Well, that's a step above Starbucks already, right there. Cause yeah. they don't use the regular machines anymore. They use only the semi-automatics. They only use the full automatics now. So, which is kind of sad. But that's for another podcast. Now you said you had some decent espresso though somewhere in Cambodia there, right?
At a gas station in Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
Really?
It's called Red Box Coffee, if I remember right. And it was a gas station, and in, you know, they had the regular convenience store foods and all that stuff sitting around. And then half of it was into a coffee shop and bar mixture.
Hmm.
And I ordered a coffee. A lot of times if you order coffee there, they give you, like, a double shot of espresso. They don't do, like, a drip coffee.
Kind of like in Europe if you order a cafe or something.
So it's more European, I guess.
Okay.
And, the French did run Cambodia for quite a while, so maybe they picked up the French stuff. But anyway, it was actually a decent shot. It had crema, and I have a picture of it. Maybe we can post the little picture on the podcast or something. And that was surprisingly good.
Great. Okay. Yeah, we were just talking about pictures here. I was trying to take a picture of my the new cup and saucer I got and the shot that I pulled for the podcast. But I might have to reshoot that. But I was going to put it up on Flickr. .com. Up until now, I haven't had anywhere to put pictures for this website that's free, and it seems like everybody is doing the Flickr thing, so maybe I'll put a link on the right-hand side of the page there. So, yeah, well, that's cool. So, there is good, decent coffee to be found. Now, that gas station, was that more of what we would consider like a convenience store here, like the gas stations we think of here, or was it a little more elaborate as far as, you know, besides gas and, you know, the munchies in?
No, I mean, it pretty much looked like, you know, any kind of a gas station, quick store we would have, but it had this coffee shop in one end of it.
Yeah.
So.
Did you ever have coffee in anybody's house?
No, I don't believe we did. We did most of our meals at a little restaurant, and that's where we got a lot of the iced coffee.
Right there, okay. Was it good, or was it kind of bitter, or?
It was, well, the iced coffees are rather sweet. The hot coffee I had that they made, I almost think it was from instant coffee. Like, it was kind of a strong but not a brewed coffee type of strong.
Yeah.
But it did the trick when you're far away from home and you need your caffeine.
Yeah. I know that part of the world is definitely known for the Robusta beans. Like, in, you know, Vietnam, a lot of the coffee, I think, majority grown there is the Robusta, which, for those of you listening, there's two, I guess there's three that I heard of coffee plants. I thought there was only two, but the main two are Arabica and Robusta. Arabica being the specialty, harder to grow, more finicky, has to have certain elevations, specific climates, and the Robusta, which is more of a, it's a hardier plant, but the taste is much more bitter, but it has a higher caffeine content. And Robusta is often used by the big companies as a filler for a lot of coffees in there, and also has that bitter taste that's known for it. But in any case, and then the iced coffees, that sweet, do they usually use, I think it's traditionally brewed coffee and then condensed milk, is that right?
Over ice? The sweetened condensed milk you buy in a can, and then the strong brewed coffee mixed together over ice.
So it's a little stronger strength than normal?
From what I can tell.
Okay. Okay, I may have to try that sometime. So, cool. Well, very good. Well, we're gonna get on to the interview. So, I want to thank you, Karen,
thank
for
you.
Stopping by and being part of the one-year anniversary of Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World, and hopefully you will have a return appearance on the podcast if you'd like.
I would be honored.
Okay, we'll definitely have you on. So we're going to get right on to none other than our meeting with the Duck Master, and of course you'll hear Karen. I think she says hello, and you'll probably hear her chuckling on there a time or two as we talk about all things duckiness, of course, on there. So thanks again, Karen, and on to the interview. All right, so I'm here in the Peabody Hotel with none other than the Duck Master himself, Lloyd Winthrow. Welcome to the podcast.
Winthrow, W-I-T-H.
Oh, man, I already messed up. I have a bent. Thank you.
Thank you.
We just got a fresh cup of coffee here from, we're sitting in the lobby, and we got Karen with me here.
Hello.
We got Karen. I'm here, and we got Lloyd Winthrow.
Winthrow.
With
no ends. Just come with me and row the boat. Winthrow.
Winthrow. Okay. There.
Now you just got your coffee delivered here. Yeah. Now you must, at this very moment, take a sip of the coffee to give us an expert's opinion of the coffee at this very moment. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Here he goes.
He's taking the microphone.
He's taking the stir stick out of it, which may have ruined the taste. He's lifting it ever so carefully, smelling, sipping, and swishing under his tongue.
Nice. Very decent. Very decent. Cheers. Decent cup of coffee.
From a coffee expert, we are thrilled to be able to offer him such a wonderful cup of coffee here at the Peabody Little Rock.
Peabody Little Rock. Okay.
So there's three Peabody hotels.
Right.
The original is Peabody in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
That started in 1869. The next hotel was in Orlando, Florida, the Peabody Orlando, which was started in 1986. And then the Peabody Little Rock here had its first Duck March January 31st, 2002.
Okay.
So we've been here a little over 5.5 years here in Little Rock.
Okay. Now people who are listening, this may be, we have listeners from around the world, and this may be the first time they've ever heard of a Duck Master. So I have all these little ducks sitting in front of me here. This is great. I have the tennis duck. I have the
businessman duck, cook duck, golf duck, swimming duck.
Yep.
We have all the ducks covered here at the Peabody Little Rock.
And they're all sitting ducks. Sorry.
Well, right now they're all in a row. During this interview, I hope I don't foul anything up.
Oh, man. All right. So the ducks, how did first give an explanation of what happens every day and then how it got started?
Well, every day at every Peabody Hotel, there's a duck march. Mm-hmm. At 11 a.m., the ducks march out mm-hmm. on red carpet. Mm-hmm. And then at 5 p.m., they march back on the red carpet to John Philip Sousa's King Cotton March.
Nice.
Since 1940. This tradition got started back in the late 30s when the general manager, Frank Shutt, his buddy Chip Barwick, they were general managers at the Peabody Memphis.
Okay.
Well, they decided they wanted to go duck hunting. So they loaded up their live ducks. At that time, you could use live ducks as decoys to call in the ducks.
Okay.
So they loaded up their live ducks, all their equipment, got in their car, and they drove all the way to L.A. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all the way to Lower Arkansas. Well, while they were here in Arkansas, it's kind of a sad story for some, a happy story for others. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't get any ducks in the country's finest areas for duck hunting still today. Well, on their way back to the Peabody Memphis, they kind of decided to drown their sorrows. Feeling a slight bit mischievous, when they got back to the Peabody Memphis, they snuck into the hotel, snuck those live decoy ducks into the fountain, snuck upstairs, slept it off, came back the next morning, lo and behold, to their amazement, number one, the ducks were still in the fountain. Number two, hundreds of people had seen and heard about the ducks in the fountain at the Peabody Memphis. So if y'all thought this was an incredible million-dollar marketing genius of the Peabody Hotel Group, well, now you know part of the rest of the story. The rest of the story goes something like this. They thought it was a pretty good idea, so they hired Mr. Pembroke, who was an animal trainer with Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus.
All right, all right.
Who trained those ducks to come out every morning at 11 a.m. and march back every evening at 5 o'clock p.m. to John Philip Sousa's King Cotton March, because cotton was king at that time. Well, Mr. Pembroke took his ducks back to the rooftop palace. We here at the Peabody Little Rock take our ducks back to their meager $90,000 duck palace on the ballroom level.
Wow.
Well, Mr. Pembroke did such an incredible job that they hired him to be the duck master. Huh. And he was the duck master from 1940 to 1991. Well, we here at the Peabody Little Rock, Memphis, and Orlando, of course, want to continue that fine tradition. And we, of course, continue that tradition every day at every hotel at 11 a.m. and 5 p.m., 365 days a year. The ducks march out at 11 and march back to their duck palace at 5 p.m.
Wow.
Well, and don't forget what they say about the duck march. Once you've seen the duck march, in case you've been wondering, once you've seen the duck march, you'll be able to go on with the rest of your life.
That's great. That's great. Wow. So there's such a history, it sounds like, behind this, and it's such a great tradition. Now, for you yourself, how long have you been the duck master?
I've been the duck master here for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And it's an incredible opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, people from all over the world literally walk in the front doors of our hotel and ask where the ducks are.
Really?
So it is an incredible tradition of, you know, 67-year tradition.
Yeah.
That I have people, the other day I had a lady who was in a 1940 duck march.
Wow.
It was her honeymoon, and she got to spend part of the day with Mr. Pembroke, and he asked her to help him with the duck march. And so she told me all about it and so forth. Now, in the 40s, during World War II, at the lobby at the Peabody Memphis, if you were a soldier, you could come in at a certain time, spend the night, if you left at a certain time. She okay. told me all about that, the soldiers that were there, and so on and so forth. But anyway, and she remembered everything about it, what they ate, what they did, what the ducks did, what Mr. Pembroke told her. And her name was Flossie from Flippin, Arkansas.
Oh, man.
You couldn't write that if you tried,
from
right?
Flippin, Arkansas. I've done interviews. I'm very fortunate to be able to do this interview today with Mr. Nathan and Karen.
Excuse me.
But I've done interviews with the London Daily Times,
wow.
the Toronto Sun, do a TV spot during school where we pick an honorary duck master on one of the top morning Channel 11, today's THV. We pick an honorary duck master every week, a child, 4 to 10 years old. They have to write an essay why they want to be honorary duck master. And then they send a picture, and then we pick that and announce one a week during school to be honorary duck master. Now, we also, the ducks, we have our ducks here. We rotate our ducks. They're good Rotarians. We rotate our ducks once every 6 to 8 months. Every hotel has a duck preserve. There's 50 to 150 ducks on each preserve for each hotel.
Okay.
We're a part of the Wetlands Initiative, which is a part of the Department of the Interior, which I'm going to the Wings and Water Festival in New Jersey here in the middle of September with the ducks from Orlando, the Peabody ducks.
Wow.
All the duck masters are going, and the team from Orlando gets to go this time. We rotate again.
Yeah.
We're into rotation around here. That we start off, all the ducks are descendants of the original 1940 Peabody ducks. When
really?
A hotel opens, they send three teams from Memphis and to a preserve. We have a preserve here with, like I said, 50 to 150 ducks on it. We release 50 to 150 ducks into the wild every year between the three hotels. This year we've released 40 into the wild ourselves. But the breeder, he determines which ducks come to the hotel which okay. ducks come go to private lakes and ponds, and which ducks get released into the wild.
Okay.
So that's his area right. or department. Now those ducks there on the preserve, they're procreating. That's usually our happiest ducks.
Yeah.
And, but they like it here at the hotel also. They get a specific feed every day. They get, you know, clean water. All their fountains get cleaned, drained, cleaned, and filled every night uh-huh. and every day when they're out here. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's like, it's been a long day. It's really, yeah, for those of you listening, it's been a heat wave this week here in this part of the country. In Arkansas, it's been, what, in what the hundreds, I think, or upper 90s?
We're 5 to 6 degrees above normal right now.
Yeah.
And we've had a very busy morning here at the Peabody Hotel, 300 people checking out. So I assist in that. My jobs and duties, of course, number one priority is the ducks.
Yes.
Yeah. But also helping any guest service activity, valet, bell, concierge, any PR activity. I'm the lobby ambassador, the hotel historian.
Okay.
Any TV spots I participate in. Any outside PR I go do. Okay. We have the Twisters football here, arena football, that we go. We have J.J. Mallard, which is the world's largest drake,
nice.
Who's our mascot, that I take over to the Twisters games, Travelers games, TV spots. We were on last Friday, Channel 11 again, where they had a summer program, Living Large in the Yard, that people did a yard makeover. Well, J.J. and I were invited to be there and talk about the summer and the hotel and et cetera. So just all kinds of activities here 3/4 of a mile from the William Jefferson Clinton Presidential Library.
Yep, I saw that on the way. And if you come down, I think it was at Route 630 there, going north or south, you'll see it on the east side of the highway.
Just on the river, on the Arkansas River. That runs right behind our hotel. We're 120 miles east of here is Memphis.
Uh-huh.
So the Arkansas River empties into the Mississippi. Okay. 120 miles east of here in Memphis, where our other property is, the original property,
which
is an incredible hotel. Mm-hmm. It was built in 1925 for $5 million.
Uh-huh.
You cannot replace the columns in the lobby today for $5 million.
Wow.
But it's when you go there and stay, which I suggest everybody come and stay at the Peabody Little Rock, of course, Orlando,
uh-huh.
but even more so the Peabody Memphis, where the whole story got started. It's a 416-room property, 465, I beg your pardon,
mm-hmm.
room property. It's like staying in a brand-new 1925 hotel.
Wow.
You sit in the lobby, and it never fails. You'll meet a star. Last time I was there having lunch with the Duck Master there, we looked to our left, and there was B.B. King eating with his family.
No kidding.
Then the last time we were there, we were riding in the elevator with the star from Numbers.
Uh-huh.
The brother with the short hair. There's the brother with the long hair that's the math. Then the other, what's his name? Does anybody out there know? Call in to know.
I can't remember. Send an email to bestmochalatte@podomatic.com.
I forgot his name, but the brother with the short hair on Numbers. We rode up and down the elevator with him. They say the South starts in the lobby of the Peabody Memphis.
Huh.
So even though we pride ourselves in Southern attitude and hospitality here at the Peabody, we try to exceed people's expectations every day here at the hotel, and we usually do.
Uh-huh.
We're a very popular destination. We have a lot of conventions.
Uh-huh.
We've had probably our biggest convention is the ATA,
uh-huh.
American Taekwondo Association, has their world championship here every year.
No kidding.
And we have about 20,000. You got to be careful that time of year and walking around. They're all kicking and swinging and swatting and everything else. But it's a very fabulous group that we have. That's just one of our big groups that bring about 22,000 people to the Little Rock area every year.
That's great. Now, how did you yourself get started as a duck master? You said you've been doing it for 3 years. Was it something that just kind of fell on your plate or that you actively sought out?
When Mr. Pembroke died, they had 2,500 applicants for his job.
Mm-hmm.
When the hotel opened here, there was 1,200 applicants to be duck master.
Wow.
that's about the average. When now they just got a new duck master in Memphis, Jason. I can't think of his last name at this moment because he's been there 3 months. I just spent 2 days with him. Sorry about that.
That's all right. That's all right.
So anyway, they had, when the duck master left there 3 months ago, they had applications from all over the world to be duck master at the Peabody Memphis. So I don't. Oh, and how did I?
Yeah.
I was here at the hotels. Been here 7 years. Basically, I was a good employee.
Yeah.
To all those young people out there that are listening, didn't have any tardies. Didn't have any absences. So I was a company man, and worked in engineering, but wanted to work with the guests more. Started having a little reaction to some of the products that we were using here at the hotel. So they said, we think you'd be a good fit for guest services. Well, when I went to guest services, what do you want me to do? So I said, valet, bell, concierge. And I said, hey, do you need somebody to help with the ducks? They said, sure. Well, the duck master here left. Well, at that, I'd been 6 months, so I fulfilled the 6 months on the OJ, on the job training before you can even be considered for it. So I had that. Then I had to go to a local board here at the hotel. Then I had to go to a corporate board. Wow. I had to work at Peabody Memphis in Orlando. And then Miss Maureen Gonzalez, at our PR lady in Orlando, she put the stamp of approval on me and said, you're the one. So that was approximately 3 years ago. And it's been quite the waddling around since then.
Yeah, yeah. Now, is there any, I'm sure there's been some, I don't know, instances over your 3 years as duck masters that duck master that sticks out in your mind as something unusual or memorable? I know you said there was just a lady last week who had been here back in 1940 on her honeymoon. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Any other kind of stories that you can...
One other interesting, well, there's been a lot of interesting things, a lot of interesting, we had President Clinton here, the library opened, the Allstate here, Chevy Chase, Robin Williams, Oprah, etc. That has stayed here in the hotel, Cher, Barbara Streisand. One interesting, as far as the duck march, I took care of Jose Feliciano for 3 days.
Really?
Took him around, rode, you know, and took him, you know, in places and different. And he had to be at every duck march. And I don't know if your listeners know this, but he is, I mean, blind. Huh. 100% blind from birth. But he had to be at every duck march. You know, it may have been something to do with the music or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And I drove him around all the time, and I'd get in the van, and, of course, he's 100% blind. And I'd get in every morning, and he'd say, good morning, Lloyd. And I had never said a word. So I don't know if I stunk or what the case was. But that was very interesting, being with a guy like that for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I got to go to his concert. He was with the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra. That's fabulous here in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
And participated in one of the concerts that they had. Robin Williams was very interesting. He came here to the hotel during the Presidential Library opening, stood out in front of the lobby and entertained guests the whole time he was here. Went to the Presidential Library opening. Our owner sat next to him and said he never, nonstop, every time somebody, a speaker would get up and speak, that Robin Williams would try to sound like him. Oh, well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, you know, and he never nonstop was entertaining the whole time he was here. President Clinton was the consummate rock star.
Yeah.
We had 100. Now, this is right after his surgery, so he looked very sick when he came here.
Yeah.
But there was 120 folks standing in the front lobby. He shook every person's hand, came over here. All his constituents were here in the lobby bar, in the middle of our lobby. He spent about 2 hours till his doctor made him go to the room. So that was all interesting, having the Presidential Library opening here. And Bono, I got to go up to his room and help him with some luggage and so forth, and got to hear him warming up in the shower because he sang at the Presidential, la da 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 da, dee dee dee, and got to take his guitar down. That was interesting.
Nice.
Let me see. Then I took President Clinton, Chelsea, and Hillary up to the room with the Secret Service and so forth. And President Clinton was inside the room there, and and looked out and saw me, and he said, has anybody taken care of that gentleman out there? And I looked in at him, and I said, no, sir. So, of course, one of the Secret Service guys reluctantly reached in his wallet and took care of me.
That's great. Now, do the ducks, do they have individual names? I know you said they rotate them around. Do they all have individual names?
The only duck that has an official name is John Philip Duck.
Really?
Or Drake. At any property, at any given time, the standard operating poultry is one Drake and four hens.
Okay.
Four girls and a boy.
Okay. Sounds like a good situation for the guy.
For all your listeners that are history buffs, this is where we get the term lucky duck.
Okay.
Ba-dum-tsh.
That's right. That's great. And
but, to enjoy, and I hope everybody's out there using their imagination, but to really participate and enjoy and to get the full effect of a duck march, which I didn't know there was such a thing till 99. You know, you just have to go by any of the hotels at any day from 11 to 5 and be a part of the duck march. You do not have to be a guest in the hotel. You don't have to pay anything. It's all free. Step in and take a gander.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And then how do they train the ducks? Because obviously they march in. Are they trained to walk? I mean,
Pavlov's theory, you know, conditioned response, just doing the same thing every day. And they get trained here. It takes 4 to 6 weeks to train the ducks.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, the ducks have eggs here. They mate and lay eggs. Now, they don't get to nest on the eggs. They do that on the preserve. But they will lay eggs, and that's how we can tell they're healthy ducks, is that they're mating and they're laying eggs. And when they lay eggs, I check the consistency of the shell, and then I call the breeder and tell him I have X amount of eggs, and he comes by and has an incubator, and he takes those eggs, put them in the incubator, for more eggs, more ducklings on the preserve for us to release private lakes and ponds, or come here to the hotel. Yeah. Now, they can get released to the wild after they leave the hotel here, but they go through a six-month reacclimation process before they do that. Wow. And their health, Dr. Bain's Little Rock Zoo, she's our veterinarian, and through her and our breeder, they've trained me a little bit how to make sure the ducks are healthy and et cetera, and what to watch for and so forth. And they go, before a team comes here, they have a checkup. They draw their blood. They have to have a piece of paper stating the health. Everything's negative, no diseases or anything else, before they can come to the hotel. After they do that, they're put in 3 days of quarantine, and then get their wings clipped when they come here to the hotel. That's how they keep from flying, is we clip their wings. Not pinion, but clip their wings, which grows back every 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
We have to clip their wings once every 4 to 6 months to keep them from flying away.
Okay.
That would not be good on my resume to have the ducks fly away.
Escapees,
Even though we've had one that flew away one time.
Really?
Yes. When we got it out of the duck palace, she just turned and it was obvious time for wing clipping, but she flew down to the river and we never saw her again.
Wow. Okay. Now, finally, a coffee related question, because I know you have to get going and prepare for the duck walk here that's coming up.
Duck march.
My mistake. I'm striking out here today. What is that?
Filing up.
That's right. Oh man. So, coffee related question. How do you take your coffee?
Most of the coffee I drink. Now, I was drinking in the morning. I had me a fancy cup. Where I drink half and half and a spoonful or two of sugar in the morning. Well, I went to the doctor the other day. And of course, what's the first thing you do when you go to the doctor? But he takes your blood pressure, which my blood pressure always stays around 120 over 80. I get on the scales and I weighed 237, which was a slap in the face. So now I've cut back on my cream and sugar and any sugars, starches. So, now I drink my coffee black.
Black.
And the coffee of choice is Folgers.
Okay.
I can't afford to go to $5. I'm Starbucks. I'm sorry.
Not many of us can anymore.
I drink my coffee black, and occasionally I'll have a little spot of cream in it, but pretty much black and water.
Yeah.
Black coffee, and I drink water.
With it.
Lemon.
Yeah.
Of course.
With it, yeah. Yeah, we were talking about coffee today. How it's a good way to start your day and kind of wake you up and get you. I'm sure in your case, get you in the mindset for the duck march happening.
There we go. You're catching on here.
It takes me a
of
few
course,
times.
I'd make a bunch of messes trying to think of what to say about the circus here. You know, Ringling Brothers. That'd be That's a lot of animals going on there at the.
That's why I find it interesting about the whole training process that you guys go through and all the safeguards and the checks and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because on the show, it's much the same thing. Like every town, they have a vet that comes and inspects the animals, their living quarters, and all that kind of stuff. So I find it very fascinating.
Now, in the paperwork that I gave you here, I gave you a little brochure on the hotel and a few pictures and then a certificate. There's a duck certificate there. I have honorary duck masters.
Oh, wow.
From time to time.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I talked about on Channel 11. We announce the honorary that they come, and I proclamate over them, and I say this over the...
Oh, no, we got a wet...
It's okay. The paper is wet. Nobody wetted here. For those listening. In tribute to their invaluable assistance, the Peabody Little Rock proudly bestows upon the undersigned the esteemed title of Honorary Duck Master. And we put their name and their date here, and I sign it here, and they get to take this. The president of the University of Oregon Ducks was my honorary duck master one day, and he said this hangs above his autographed picture of President Bush.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you.
That's no slam to Bush or anything.
Oh, no, we're non-political on this podcast. We ride the middle line on everything. So, well, great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to sit down with the podcast here, Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World, and tell us all about ducks and the duck mastering and the duck march and everything else.
Now, one more thing. We are very close to UAMS, which is the myeloma cancer, number one myeloma cancer institute and surgery hospital anywhere. So I get a lot of cancer patients in here. I had a lady one day that was in a coma for 3 weeks, woke up from a coma, the first thing she wanted to do was see the duck march. I had a young boy, 9 years old, who had going through cancer treatment, had a trach in his throat. His dad had to hold him. He could barely, you know, move. And one of his favorite things to do while he was here was come to the duck march.
Wow.
We have a lot of now some of the hotels take the ducks out to the area schools and so forth. We have a lot of rural areas here in Arkansas, but our general manager likes the kids to come here because I'll have kids come here, children come here, and you think they'll send letters and thank yous about how wonderful I am and how the ducks are, but it's, man, the elevator or the escalator, or they'd never ridden on an elevator before.
Wow.
So he likes them to come here to be able to take part in some of the experiences here at the hotel. So I like that about him. One of the toughest duck marches I had, we had the 39th Brigade that's here in Arkansas in Little Rock.
Okay.
And we had all the children, our general manager, Mr. Herning, had all the families that had lost a loved one that had a special duck march for them. And then all the people in the 39th, he had them here for dinner and like it was a day at the Peabody for them. And I had the whole duck march lined with all these children who had lost a mother or father in Iraq.
Wow.
And that was one of the toughest duck marches I ever did. But I appreciate that about our general manager. He's very sensitive and about the area and the local community and involved in the local community. And that's what we try to achieve, even though we're Arkansas's only four diamond hotel. You know, we try not to be too uppity,
right?
You know, and try to, you know, again, get involved not just with the symphony orchestra, but, you know, the cancer and student children and junior golf and so on and so forth.
Still be a big part of the community.
Across the community, that's what it's all about. But anyway, it's a pleasure and an honor and a privilege to meet with somebody from Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus.
That's right.
Right here in Little Rock, Arkansas, to be a part of history. That's what this is all about. Because every person has a story, and every story is a piece of history.
Yeah.
So that's what I like best about my job, is all the people you meet and all the stories that they have. So thank you, Nathan. Thank you, Karen. And thank you, all those coffee lovers out there.
Listen around the world. All right. Thanks, Lloyd. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. We had a good time. Lloyd's, he's a good guy, very good guy. And actually, I got to be part of the ceremony, the Duck March. I got to be part of that and play a little fanfare for all the duckies as they marched on to their duck palace, which I actually got to see as well. So I highly recommend going check it out. Now, as you know, it's been, man, since the last time I podcasted, I've been on a motorcycle trip. The circus has changed towns a couple times. I'm actually talking to you from Duluth, Atlanta, not Duluth, Minnesota, Duluth, Atlanta, or Georgia, rather, which is right outside of Atlanta. And, since the last podcast, I believe that was in, Aiken, Aiken, South Carolina. Took the epic motorcycle trip, Odysseus on a Ducati, yep, that's right, and took a trip all the way from Aiken, South Carolina, up through six states and 2,300 miles, and and I got to visit friends and drink coffee all along the way, so very worthwhile. Although my butt was pretty sore. I don't think my motorcycle's quite made for long distance riding, but I don't know. That's what I have, so that's what I ride. I make it work. Yeah, but the reviews this week, I'm not going to do a coffee scene from a town per se. I'm just going to give you all the places from my trip, which actually weren't too many places. But I'm just going to go ahead and give you the places from the trip and kind of take you on the route I went on. So here we go. So I started out from Aiken, South Carolina, and went up through Athens, Georgia, into North Carolina, the Smokies, because I wanted to ride the whole Blue Ridge Parkway. So I stayed the night up there in Sylva, North Carolina, and the first place I visited the next morning was Coffee Grounds Coffee Bar. Now this was a cool little place, definitely a rustic kind of feel. I think they had an Astoria espresso machine. And not too much seating. They had a few tables, maybe two, maybe three tables in house. But very nice people. And they had pumpkin chocolate chip muffins, which are usually you only see those in the fall, the autumn and everything. But very tasty. So the mocha latte I wrote here, the coffee in the mountains. The view was great, but this drink wasn't too exciting. Served out of the go cup, asked on whipped cream. Loose foam, pretty weak espresso, okay chocolate. I could take it or leave it, really. So 3.1 beans. Now, later that day, I rode, got up the Smoky Mountains, hopped on the Blue Ridge Expressway, and after about 100 miles, I hit Asheville, North Carolina. And there was only one place that I didn't get to try last time when the circus played in Asheville, and that was Kismet Cafe. So I made it a point to get there, and it was a great little place. I got a Reuben sandwich, very kind of cool, hip kind of feel, but not not overbearing. You didn't feel out of place there. Just kind of funky, cool, laid back. And they have some bar seating by the window, and they also have some seating inside some tables, as well as a few tables and umbrellas outside. And it's very quiet. It's located in the Biltmore Village, and if you're familiar with the Biltmore Estate, which is that big mansion-looking place that everyone associates with Asheville, North Carolina, if you don't know what it is, Google it, Biltmore Estate. It's kind of cool to do for a day. You should see it at least once, even though it's a little pricey. And definitely do the wine tour, the wine tasting tour. But I digress. The Kismet Cafe, though, yeah, very cool. Now, the drink, I wrote here, interesting drink with potential. Served in-house cup. Nice, almost latte, art quality foam. Decent chocolate. Espresso had potential, but needed to be more present in the drink, i.e., its balance was a little off, but I'd drink it again. So 3.7 beans on that. And then the rest of that day, I rode up the Blue Ridge Parkway. I got tired because the traffic wasn't moving and it was raining. So I got on the highway, 80-something north at Boone, North Carolina, and went up through Roanoke, crashed at Roanoke, and the following day made my way up to my folks' place near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. While I was up there, I tried Crave Cafe has a stand at the Lebanon Farmers Market in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, and you're going to be hearing a little, a bit that I did with my dad, with the coffee bet. You'll see if I had to treat him or if he had to treat me to coffee. That'll be next week. But yeah, the Crave Cafe has a stand up there in the farmer's market. Now, I have to say, I was a little disappointed with the drink I wrote here. I have to admit my disappointment with this drink. It was served out of a go cup, but it was okay since it's in a farmer's market. But the balance was off. They use counterculture coffee, it's espresso, so I knew it was good ingredients, but it was a weak pull with medium loose foam and unbalanced flavor, so 3.3 beans on that. Also, I took a day to, or half a day, I guess, to go down and visit my friend Mary, who's an old friend from high school, and it turns out we're both foodies, and she has her own website as well that she started in Westchester, and for restaurants and just writing about food. She's really excited about food, and so she is creator of WC Dish, which is wcdish.com, Westchester, WC. And so we got to hang out, and she was up for a coffee trip, hopped on the motorcycle, and we headed to Chestnut Hill and to check out Chestnut Hill Coffee Company, because that's one of the places that was a must visit for me on this trip, was Chestnut Hill Coffee Company there. And so we made the trip, hit rush hour traffic, got there, and it was great. The baristas were really cool, really friendly. Beautiful place inside. You walk in, I think it's hardwood floors, standing glass window behind the coffee bar, good seating downstairs, one of the best bathrooms I've ever seen in a coffee shop, really fancy bathroom. And then you can also go upstairs and sit, there's a big picture window upstairs that gives you a view out over the Chestnut Hill, little main street area there, and you can watch the people walking around and walking their dogs, all that kind of fun stuff. And there's also a beautiful Ambex roaster. I think it's John Hornall is beginning in more into the roasting side, creating his own blends of espresso and coffee. It's exciting stuff. So yeah, and very, very good coffee. Anyways, so Chestnut Hill Coffee Company, their drink I wrote here, overall not a bad drink on the mocha latte. But I have mixed feelings about it. Taste was good, but it was chocolate heavy. Didn't let the espresso shine through. Nice foam, no latte art though, only chocolate swirls and cocoa powder on top. Served out of to-go cup, I'd give it another go. 4.4 beans. Next up, the following day, I rode from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, all the way down to Williamsburg, Virginia. It's about, I think, 10, maybe 12 hours of riding. And on the way, I stopped in Townsend, Maryland at Jay Carrigay's place, Spro Coffee, which is in the public library there in Townsend, Maryland. And Jay is one of the guys, Jay and Nick Cho, do the portafilter.net podcast. So if you want to know who they are, go over to portafilter.net and www.portafilter.net, and you can find all about that. Fun stuff, always a good time on the podcast. Informative, more for the coffee industry type people, but still good time all around. So yeah, Spro Coffee, and I have to say, his La Marzocco espresso machine, I've never seen one like it. It's pretty much a pimped out espresso machine. It has lighting effects on it. It has, I don't know if it's pitted or not, but it has lights so you can watch right underneath the brew group there, so you can watch the espresso pool, the color, and yeah, really, really good stuff. I actually put a video of it up on YouTube. I use my camera phone and just put, I mean, it's only like a couple seconds long, but it gives you the idea. So if you go to YouTube and type in, I think probably, it'll probably come up with Spro Coffee or La Marzocco or Spro Coffee or Best Mocha Latte, whatever, and it should come up and you can check it out there on YouTube.com. But yeah, so the drink I wrote here, a nice drink, worth the trip. For sure. It was served auto to go cup, nice foam and mouthfeel with a tasty espresso shot in the background. Chocolate seemed okay, but Barista made a mistake and put cinnamon on my order. Although she did, to her credit, she did offer to remake it. But it was close to closing time, so I said, no, that's all right. Perhaps on a return visit, I'll try it out. So I gave it, I put Sursa 4.6 beans since it had the cinnamon on it. I mean, it was, you could still taste the mocha latte through it all. So Sursa 4.6 beans on that. Next up is Murky Coffee, which is Nick Cho's place. They have two locations. I got to visit the one in Arlington, Virginia, and very cool place. It's right on kind of like a, if you don't know the roads around there, it's easy to drive right by it and not know it and get caught in one-way streets and all that fun stuff. But cool kind of place, very hip, low-key, not, it didn't feel, some people say it didn't feel pretentious to me. Baristas knew what they were doing. Got to sit there. Actually, got to sit and watch at the coffee bar. There's, you can kind of see, watch them making drinks and stuff. So, very cool place. A lot of people working on laptops. Not many people conversing. There were, I would guess, there were outside. And that, they also have a cupping room there too, I think. Counterculture. I think they do a cupping in conjunction with Counterculture once a week. Maybe not. You have to go to their website. They have all the info about that on their Murky Coffee. But I wrote about the drink. Where is it? Yes. I had high expectations and wasn't disappointed. This is one of the better mochas in the country. Served in-house cup, beautiful latte art. I wrote succulent espresso taste, supported by a subtle dark chocolate, which I believe is from Intelligentsia is where they get their dark chocolate. So dark chocolate in the background. Tasty. And made the many hours on the motorcycle worth it. So 4.8 beans on there. Next up is Williamsburg, Virginia, and Busch Gardens. This is my last review for my motorcycle trip. And you're probably saying, espresso, mocha latte, and Busch Gardens? Well, yeah. They, in the Italy part of Busch Gardens, they have an espresso machine, and you can order any espresso drinks. Now, I can't say it's good espresso. I don't know where they get their beans from. I may have to ask. I have some connections there, so I could probably find out. But I wasn't expecting much, and I got about what I mean, it's a theme park after all. You ride roller coasters and eat food and all that kind of stuff, so usually espresso isn't part of that. But I wrote here, espresso in a theme park? What? ! It's true, but I don't think I'd drink it again. I served auto-to-go cup, loose foam, weak espresso, fake-tasting chocolate. This is more of a hot chocolate gone wrong than a mocha latte. So 2.2 beans. So that wraps up my motorcycle trip. It was a lot of fun. I have another big one planned, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. But first, I'm going to pull some more espresso, because there's nothing better than drinking espresso while talking about espresso, of course. So I'm going to go back and make some more of that yummy Super Tuscan that I've been checking out this week, and run through his paces, and I'll be right back. Enjoy the music. Back here with my double shot. I want to taste it. I think it was more of a, it ended up being more of a ristretto, trying to get the grind. It takes, if any of you had tried out new espresso before, it takes a little bit before you get the machine dialed in quite correctly, but it's a real nice taste. Kind of a wild, kind of like a wild background to it, but kind of a refined, like a refined nuttiness that rises over the top. But very smooth, not bitter at all. So I like it. It's, maybe it's just me, but I like it for sure. So now I wanted to talk a little bit about something big, a huge event in the coffee world that happened a few weeks ago, and that is the World Barista Championship. Now, you're probably saying, Nathan, the Barista Championship? What? Yeah, they have a competitive area for baristas. If you go back and listen to the podcast with AJ, the barista from the roastery in Kansas City, it's one of the earlier podcasts. I actually asked him a little bit about that, and there in Kansas City, and we talk a little bit about what that is and everything. But basically, you have people. You have 15 minutes to prepare 4 espressos, 4 cappuccinos, and then 4 signature drinks, which are often called SIG drinks for short. And this year, it was a real treat for any coffee loving person in the world, because a couple podcasters, a website from ZacharyZachary.com, actually went to Japan and gave live updates and video and blogged about the whole thing. And you too can, you also, however you want to say it, can go, if you go on the internet, ZacharyZachary.com, that's ZacharyZachary.com, or just type in Zachary Zachary on Google and it'll come up. And you can watch all of the videos up there. They have, I believe there are over 40 countries this year, which is a record for the world, WBC, the World Barista Competition, and you can watch them compete. And the finalists, when you get to the finalists, it's really cool because you can feel the energy and the pressure and just, you know, everything going on there, and pretty cool stuff. So I want to send a shout out to the guys at ZacharyZachary.com, and Zachary and Katie, awesome job. Awesome job on the footage and the coverage. I was watching all the videos, and I recommend anyone out there in the world listening to go check it out. You can learn a lot just by watching some of the top baristas in the entire globe. So very cool stuff. So yeah, so that about wraps it up for this week. Now, as I said, this is the 1 year anniversary for Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. Who knows? There may be a 2 year, 3 year. I don't know where exactly everything will end up, but as a little celebration, I wanted to give a couple of the, over the past, I've been keeping track for of coffee places for just about, oh, I'd say probably almost 2 years now that I've been keeping little black books of of the coffee place, and I just went through and looked over the couple hundred coffee places of some of the best that I've visited. You know, I figured 1 year, you know, people want to know, you know, what are some of the best places in the country that you visited? And I realized early on in a lot of my ratings, they were kind of skewed high because my palate hadn't quite tasted as many yet. And of course, the more you taste, the more discriminating you become, because the more educated your palate becomes. But amongst the top ones, I wrote down here the Coffee Hound in Bloomington, Illinois, that got a 4.8. La Colombe in Philadelphia, I remember that one. They actually put straight 100% cacao in the mochas there, and then you add your own sugar. But I'd like to go back and try that one again. Gray Friars in Chattanooga, they got a 4.5. I remember that one well. Let's see, I got the Coffee Hound. The Roastery Cafe in Kansas City, they got a 4.7. Open Eye, which is there in, was it Raleigh? Is it, no, not Raleigh. Chapel Hill, North Carolina there. They got a 4.5, very nice place. The Morning Times in Raleigh, that was in Raleigh, got a 4.4. A couple 4.4s. Fresh Beans Coffee got a 4.6. Where were they from? Sometimes I get so many places I have to go back and look that one up. Shades of Brown in Tulsa. The other week, Tulsa had a lot. They got a 4.6. World Cup Espresso, Taos, New Mexico. Orchid Isle Cafe, which is in Kona, Hawaii. Just tried recently. Otherlands Coffee in Memphis. Got very well. Double Shot Coffee in Tulsa. Chestnut Hill Coffee, Spro Coffee in Townsend, Maryland, Murky Coffee. I just talked about those places recently. Let's see, look here, the Sentient Bean, it's pretty decent in Savannah, Georgia. Brick House Coffee was decent up in Erie, Pennsylvania. What else we got here? Oh, Portland Brew in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's see, Nordagio's pretty decent there in Tulsa. So those are a few places over my first year of podcasting that I would list as some of my tops for sure that I visited. So yeah, good stuff. So that about wraps it up for this week. This next week coming up is going to be exciting. I'm preparing for a new motorcycle trip. This is going to be, I think, almost, I wouldn't say twice the distance of the last one, but we're in Duluth, Georgia, as I said before, and then we have another break, and we're going to be opening in Prescott Valley, Arizona. So I'm going to be taking a huge motorcycle trip from Arizona down through San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and then back through Las Vegas and back to Arizona, and trying coffee, meeting coffee people, checking out a lot of these cafes that I've always wanted, that I've heard a lot about on forums, and so yeah, I'm very, very much looking forward to that. And next week I'm also going to, so I'm going to have the coffee scene from the Atlanta metro area as well as some coffee websites and resources to check out. And I have another interview in the workings, but I'm not going to give it away quite yet because I just want to make sure I get it all edited before I put it up and give it away. So, yeah, thanks again for listening. If you want to, it's been a good year. It really has. If you want to write in, you can send an email at bestmochalatte@gmail.com. And as always, you can check out the website for this podcast at bestmochalatte.podomatic.com. And if you want to check out the ratings and some pictures, and if you want to know why in the world, Nathan, do you taste mocha lattes and not just espresso or cappuccinos, go to bestmochalatte.blogspot.com. And I have a thing up there as well as all the ratings that you hear every week. So, yeah, good stuff. And also, a new added feature, I put up a Flickr. I started a Flickr website, which is for pictures, because there's a lot of pictures of things I want to talk about. I'm going to put pictures of my espresso pools, of the coffee this week, and just pictures from all my journeys, some from the motorcycle trip. I just needed a place to put them that you can check them out, so they're going to be up there. So yeah, so that about wraps it up for this week. I want to say thanks again to the roastery. I'm going to put some pictures of up of that on the Flickr. The have a naked portafilter on my espresso machine. Beautiful stuff. Yeah. So thank you to the roastery and Jason and Brandon there. If you want to check out that Super Tuscan espresso, just type in Super Tuscan or type in roastery on Google, and yeah, you can check it out and taste it for yourself. It's actually really good as a macchiato. I tried that little bit of, you know, cream, froth cream, or half and half in there. Yeah, tasty stuff. Yeah, tasty stuff. So thank you for listening. And of course, there's a new song by Mod Dog. There always is. And this one is called Singing for Espresso. So thank you all for listening. If you've been listening for an entire year, congratulations. Thank you. And until next week, as always, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.